You're listening to a podcast from funnyinthemiddle.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this, we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on funnyinthemiddle.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking, on with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to We Dig Music. I'm Ian, and with me are my comrades and co-hosts, Tracy.
Hello.
And Colin.
Hello.
Every episode we talk about a different letter of the alphabet.
More bands beginning with the letter of the alphabet.
Shut up, I was about to elucidate upon that point. Okay. We're not called We Dig Letters, are we? No. I feel like the music was implied. Anyway, okay. So we pick a different letter of the alphabet every month. Obviously, at this point, we're going in alphabetical order, but that might not
also,
always be the case.
It's every 2 weeks.
Fuck off, Colin. Every 2 weeks, we pick a different letter of the alphabet and talk about bands to do with them. A support band and a larger headlining band, if you will. We are on W for Wanker, which is appropriate. Because Colin. And... What bands are we talking about today, Colin?
We are talking about White Zombie
and
The White Stripes.
And who is the headliner in this scenario?
White Stripes.
But when was the last time The White Stripes headlined a festival?
More recently than White Zombie.
Well, I guess so, but when was the last time Rob Zombie headlined a festival?
In the UK, he'd still play to a smaller audience than Jack Whitewood.
Maybe. Maybe.
But he's not my favourite of the two.
Anyway, let's get on with this. Let's talk about White Zombie first.
Hell yeah.
I just said up yours, baby.
White Zombie were an American heavy metal band formed in 1985, based in New York. They were originally a noise rock band.
Yeah.
Kind of more punk. They always reminded me of the Cramps, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the earlier stuff definitely does.
Definitely. And,
a bit more psychobilly and stuff.
Yeah. So they were formed by vocalist Rob Cummings.
I thought it was Rob Straker.
No, that was his first stage name.
Really?
Yeah.
God
so
damn.
He was called Rob Straker for the first few albums, and then changed his name to Rob Zombie, as he is more well known.
Wow.
Along with his girlfriend at the time, Sean Yazult, on bass. And they had various different guitarists and drummers for the first few years, before Ivan DePrume became their drummer. For most of the time up until they made it big.
Yep.
And then they had another couple of drummers and then finally settled on John Tempesta, brother of Mike Tempesta from Human Waste Project, as we spoke about a few
episodes ago. An absolute machine of a drummer as well.
For their final album, Astro Creep 2000, in 95. Which...
I believe he's still Rob Zombie's drummer now.
He definitely was in the solo career at the start, so he may well be. Still, I've not really followed his solo career as much.
No, me neither.
I saw him last year at Hellfest, though. He was good.
Yeah.
He was good.
Excellent. So, the classic lineup, the guitarist was Jay Younger.
Yes.
Who joined in 1989, I think. Yeah, 89.
Yeah.
So, I think I'm going to make a bold statement here. Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction, and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head.
Yeah.
Is the greatest metal album of all time.
That's a bold statement.
I know it's a bold statement, but I've thought this for over 20 years
now. It's fucking great. I'm not entirely sure I'd say, but you know what? I asked my mum to get me that album because she was going into Birmingham one day, and I was like, "Well, could you get me that album?" And I told her the full title.
Excellent.
I didn't tell her she could say Astro Creep 2000. I also got her to ask for it on the double gatefold pink vinyl.
Ooh.
I didn't get it. I got it on tape.
Yeah.
But she still asked for it by the full title and was like,
"That's brilliant."
They all refer to it as Astro Creep 2000 here. I'm like, yeah, I know. Subtitle, right?
They do like a long title, don't they?
They do.
I think that was the longest they ever got, but.
Yes.
The previous album was La Sexorcisto Devil Music Volume 1.
Which is a great album title.
Yeah. It's a great album.
It is.
Yeah. I got into them when I was at school.
Yeah.
So it was just after Astro Creep 2000 had come out, so it was 95.
Yeah, see, I had La Sexorcisto first, which I think is why I favour that one.
Okay.
As we have established, the first album you get of a band is usually
quite
your favourite.
Yeah. I love both of them, and I also love the earlier stuff as well.
Yeah.
Although that took a lot more getting into.
Yeah, because it's a very big leap.
It's very, very, very different. Because they're sort of noise rock, kind of all over the place, punk rock with out-of-tune guitars.
Yeah.
Rob Straker at that point, his vocals are much higher pitched.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like a completely different band.
And it does. Like, his lyrical output is quite different as well.
And I remember buying a bootleg copy of Psycho Head Blowout and Soul Crusher, which was the first EP and first album.
I own that.
I think it was my old copy.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because you sold it to Pat's Records, and I bought it from Pat's Records.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I bought it from Pat's Records and then resold it back to Pat's Records.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I was like, nah, this isn't White Zombie.
Yeah.
I do remember at the time, because the guitars are really out of tune on it,
yeah,
which I now don't mind at all. But at the time, I was thinking of submitting a copy of the CD to Guitarist Magazine, to their demos section, and claiming it was my band. Because I thought, I could get away with that, they'll believe that. I didn't.
No.
I'm glad I didn't. Because that would have been stupid. But I was 13, so...
Yeah.
But they don't really sound like anyone else.
Not really.
They're very distinctive. You've got Rob Zombie's vocal style, but you've also got another thing that's really significant about their style is movie samples.
Yes.
There's
that was one of the first thing that drew me in was all the samples, and also like that sample at the start of Black Sunshine is not a sample, is it?
It's
Iggy Pop
talking,
just being cool.
Because Iggy Pop was a friend and a fan of theirs since the early noise rock stuff.
Yeah.
I believe he recommended Jay Younger to them as a new guitarist when they needed one. Because he knew him from an old... he was in an old Chicago hardcore band.
Yeah.
And he sort of knew him from... They used to gig with Black Flag and Fugazi and that kind of thing.
I doubt. Imagine if you were friends with Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
How cool would that be?
They don't sound like anyone else. But when I started listening to them...
Are you going to say Front 242?
No, I'm not.
Good.
For once. They reminded me a lot of all the Grebo rock I listened to in my teens. Zodiac, Mindwalk, Crazy Head, Gay Bikers on Acid. And later Pop Will Eat Itself, especially with the keyboards and the sampling.
I can see a bit of that there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because they were all very sort of British sounding, weren't they?
Oh, very much.
And White Zombie are very American.
Mm.
I think they sound quite British, but that's because I think they sound like something like Gay Bikers on Acid. I mean, they were from Leicester, for fuck's sake. And Rob Zombie actually looks, I think, a bit like Clint from Pop or Eat Itself, and a lot like Zodiac Mind Warp.
He's definitely got that kind of aesthetic.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, just for sure. That
it's like
Garibo sex symbol look.
Well, I was just saying earlier, their clothes are all like, you'd have like a denim waistcoat with loads of patches all over it and day glow almost.
Yeah, like I feel like their fashion, what, like, I think it was, it came from Rob, I reckon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, he was the mastermind of the image.
Yeah.
Never really bothered with dressing his drummers, did he?
No. No, they're normally black t-shirt.
Yeah. So he's just got these day glow, like, leopard print craziness out front, and then just a drummer at the back, like, yo.
But Sean Yuzult with her bright yellow hair or bright green hair, depending on the,
yeah,
the
yeah.
time. Just looking ultra amazingly cool.
Yes.
They were. I think it's probably quite dated now, but as I grew up with that kind of thing.
It is, but it's dated in a. It hasn't aged badly.
No, not at all.
It's, you know, you can put it on and be like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
Tracy, you hadn't actually heard them until the other week where we were driving back from London and I put Astro Creep 2000 yeah. on in the car.
I mean, I've known the name for a good while because I think because you go on about them, yeah. the other people we know go on about them, but I hadn't actually listened to them. And I thought it was going to be some god-awful metal that I wouldn't like at all. And I really liked it. It's just really clean, well-structured metal. It's so well-produced, so danceable.
It's heavy, but it's really, really fucking accessible.
Yeah, I think it's because his vocals are really characterful and he's not, like, growling or anything. He's just... That's just
well, it's almost rapping,
yeah,
sort of thing. But there's definitely growly bits in there.
Yeah,
not much scream. You know, he's not like a your man from Obituary kind of thing.
No,
doesn't sound like he needs exercising.
Really, I think you should go and listen to Gay Bikers and Acid album. Drill Your Own Hole.
Okay,
I think. You might see the comparisons. I'm
definitely going to check that out. Absolutely. They basically they were really obscure for years and years and years.
Yeah.
For like 6 years or so, putting out these weird noise rock albums. Then, sort of two things happened to change the sound. Jay Younger joined,
yeah.
and he brought a sort of more metal kind of sound to the guitar. And I think what must have happened is Rob Zombie's voice broke.
Yeah.
Because he was really high pitched before, and suddenly it's quite.
Maybe that, like, once Jay started playing guitar like that, he was like, oh, yeah, I need to do I need more to, like this.
Need to stop doing yelpy high vocals and.
Yeah, just brought him more into.
Become a zombie. But yeah, so they put out the God of Thunder EP in 1989, which is where their sound suddenly appears.
Yeah.
I mean, even after that. There's a big leap in sound from that to Los Exorcisto.
And there's another big leap from Los Exorcisto
to Astro,
to
Creep.
Astro Creep.
Yeah.
Because Astro Creep's magnitude's heavier.
Yes. Well, they're tuned down to drop C sharp.
Yeah.
Whereas they're in standard tuning on Los Exorcisto.
Yep.
But they're both great.
I really love Jay's guitar playing. He's discordant in the right way. Like, he's a really good guitarist. He's clearly technically capable, but he just makes fucking noise.
And I'm not a metal guitarist. I never look at guitars and go, oh, I need like active EMG pickups and I need a Floyd Rose tremolo. But his bright green Ibanez Iceman with stars all over it.
Yeah.
He's one of my ideal guitars. I would love to own one of those.
Solid state amps as well.
Yeah. What amps was it?
Randall Centuries. Okay. Same as Dimebag Darrell.
Yes. I did notice that, actually. I was watching a... MTV fucking loved them.
They got fucking massive.
Well, it was Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
They were basically... somebody at MTV picked up on the fact that, obviously, not only had they got this really accessible metal sound, but they'd also got a really amazing visual side to it as well. And thought this is going to be fucking perfect for MTV. So
Joe, I can't believe I never heard them back in... Well, maybe I did hear them and I've just forgotten them because I used to watch Beavis and Butthead a lot.
Well, they were definitely featured on Beavis and Butthead every single time
that
I had a video out.
The Beavis and Butthead Do America, Rob Zombie directed an entire section of that.
Yes.
I've seen that film.
Yeah, you know the bit where they're on...
The Hallucination.
Yeah, The Hallucination, that's him.
All right.
It's even got the back cover of Le Sexorcisto in the animation.
Yeah.
But,
and I just wasn't aware.
Yeah, so he draws all their sort of cartoony style artwork and that kind of thing.
He's a very visual guy. Like I'm sure he's directed all of their videos as well.
Yes, he did. Yeah, but so Beavis and Butthead picked up on it was either Thundercast 65 or Black Sunshine.
Yeah, because those were the two singles off that album, weren't they?
Beavis and Butthead played that and were. For people that don't know about it, Beavis and Butthead used to have videos on and they'd basically do a commentary over the videos.
Yeah.
Just.
It was very irreverent. And
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're definitely worth watching on YouTube because they were the best bit of Beavis and Butthead. They were fucking brilliant.
Apart from The Great Cornholio, which is the best episode of Beavis and Butthead ever.
It's definitely the best.
But look up the Pantera ones because.
No, the Henry Rollins Liar one is the best.
Liar! I'm quite a fan of. Hey, Pantera, mow the lawn!
Do you ever see him do Crowbar? So they think Crowbar sounds like the gym teacher.
Yeah.
So they're just like, get down and give me 20!
So.
Yeah.
Basically.
Watch Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. But White Zombie suddenly started seeing record sales.
Yeah.
In states where they'd never toured, as soon as they were on Beavis and Butthead, they started, you know, immediately selling thousands and thousands more records. So then toured in those areas, and MTV sort of basically adopted them as their chosen metal band for years. They used to appear on Headbangers Ball regularly.
Yeah.
And on one series of Headbangers Ball, the first episode of it. They got Rob Zombie was in there to paint the backdrop for them.
Awesome.
And he deliberately did it as slowly as possible, and he was on the entire series. Just slowly painting this wall in the background and just painting a bit more each time.
That's amazing.
And from that they got loads of extra coverage and that kind of thing. And there was also, I saw a video the other day of them doing a competition winner where they got to come and play in this bloke's back garden.
Yeah.
It was this little teenage American kid about like 16, 17.
Awesome.
And they just set up a stage and White Zombie played an open air gig in the back garden. It was absolutely brilliant. That's where I noticed the Randall Amps.
Yeah, yeah.
They were just, like Van Halen, they're just so much fun. They're really cartoony.
Yeah, super cartoony. And they, but
they're not cheesy in the way.
No.
That
I mean, some people might think
Van Halen are. In fact, there was a quote from Rob Zombie that said, "Music should be fun, but it shouldn't be funny."
I'm sure you've used that quote before.
No, I have.
Ian has.
Was it a Rob Zombie? I thought it was Attributes.
No, that's a Rob Zombie quote.
Right. Okay.
But it's not actually. It's a Rob Zombie and Sean Salt quote.
Right.
Because Rob Zombie says music should be fun, and she says, "But it shouldn't be funny."
Right.
I remember the interview.
Right.
But they were very much on the same page, so they may as well be the same.
Well, they formed the band together.
Yeah.
And basically, I mean, she was the only constant other than Rob Zombie throughout the whole of the band's career. There's internet rumours, and basically they absolutely hated each other towards the end, the whole band did. The whole band didn't all hate each other. There were two camps. There was Rob Zombie and there was the rest of them.
Yeah.
And they, for the tours for Astro Creep 2000, I mean, that came out in 95, they split up in 98.
Yeah.
And for the 3 years from that album, when they toured, they had two separate tour buses, one that was Rob Zombie's, one was the rest of the band. But I think part of the reason that they split up was she's his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
He has got a new wife. There's a lot of rumours that they did not get on at all.
You should never be in a band with anyone you're in a relationship with. It never goes well. Just never.
But, yeah.
Well, you said their early stuff sounded, you think, quite Cramps, quite psychobilly. Yeah. I was listening to it, and maybe, but I mean, it's more sort of just straight post-punk, I thought. Reminded me of a band, a Peel favourite from the mid-80s, who I really liked, the Folk Devils.
Okay, don't know them.
I thought it had a real feel, a Folk Devils feel to it. And there was, there was a couple of tracks I picked out that I'd listened to on that compilation of their early stuff. It came from NYC.
Yeah.
Tales from the Scarecrow Man.
That was the first track on their first EP.
It's post-punk genius.
It's. I love it. I've got the 7-inch they released for Record Store Day re-release of it a couple of years
ago. Yeah, I really liked it. And Cat's Eye Resurrection, I thought could almost be a fall song.
Yeah, it's almost a fall song title, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly.
In fact, Rob Zombie's lyrics make about as much sense as Mark E. Smith's.
Oh, we're doing this.
I think
Cat's Eye Resurrection. Ah. Yeah, that would work.
to demonstrate the utter bizarreness of Rob Zombie's lyrics, we present to you today a dramatic reading of Cosmic Monsters, Inc.
I'll be reading Cosmic Monsters, Inc., yes.
Yes.
Take
it away, Ian.
Okay. How big is life? Can it ride like a butterfly? Star in the dust, Rocket Man, Super Sky. Sugar the hill, explode and never die. I think I will. Come on, take it. Hi. I got to, oh yeah. Come on, so high. I got to, oh yeah. Come on. So loosely illustrated, a trick of light I demonstrated right to you. What you do. How high is up? Can it reach at the butterfly? Rise in the howl. Hit me cold. Super Sky. Witness the kill, explode, never die. I think I will. Come on, take it. High. I got to, oh yeah. Thank you.
And to follow up on this one, I shall be reading from Electric Head Part 2, The Ecstasy. Strip down, core, violate and paralyze. Flood my soul a coffee dreg.
Supersize.
Slung low like a whore, yeah. Devil wants some more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cupid bought a gun. He gonna blow the fucker. Yeah, I want it. Yeah, I need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Electric head in your head, in your head, in you. Breakneck speed. Get a violent spinal cracking. Back down to the chrome and feel the death wish attacking. Hubcaps on your eyes, yeah. Cannot sympathise.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fistful of hair and a splinter in the mind. Yeah, I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Electric head, in your head, in your head, in you. Too far gone, see the freak apologize. Flood my soul a coffee dreg, supersize. Slung low like a whore, yeah. Devil wants some more, yeah. Cupid bought a gun. He gonna blow the fucker.
Yeah.
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 He likes the word yeah.
He does, which is super positive.
I was thinking that what I might do before this episode is put one of the albums on and count the amount of times that he says yeah.
It's like the Zakk Wylde drinking game, isn't
yeah.
it? The Rob Zombie drinking game. Every time he says yeah, do a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd die.
Yep. There's one chorus on Astro Creep 2000 which is just like
yeah.
So yeah, like maybe not. Maybe don't do that.
Yes. Did you ever see them live?
I never saw White Zombie live.
No, I've seen Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
But I was watching... I've got an old bootleg from Halloween 1995.
Yeah.
White Zombie Totally Destroy Las Vegas.
I own that on CD as well.
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. It's a radio broadcast.
Yeah.
So quite interestingly, they've edited out all the swearing, which means that it's got silence and the swearing's really rhythmical. So it almost sounds like it's remixed in parts. Like with a stutter effect.
Yeah.
But their live shows were awesome. I found one from around about that sort of time on YouTube where somebody just videoed it with a camcorder from the back of the arena. And there's loads of like visuals, like there's a video screen behind them with old horror movie stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the way they all dress is amazing, as we were saying earlier.
Yep.
You've got there's fireworks going off all over the place. And then you've got the way that Rob Zombie moves on stage.
Yeah, he's a hell of a front man.
Like, dancing is amazing.
Super inconsistent vocally.
Yes.
Like he does. Rob Zombie live, I think he gets out 50 to 70% of the lyrics most songs, but
I think some, particularly the older ones, are probably quite hard for him to keep up with when he's got so much energy.
Yeah, because he is running around a lot, and he's like, he's 53 now.
Yeah. But it's another one where if I could get a time machine, I'd love to go back to about 95 and see them in America, because they didn't, when they played over here, I don't think they brought the full production with them.
I don't think they could,
because it was too expensive. Plus they were playing smaller venues over here.
And I'd just like to see him without John Five, because John Five's a fantastic guitarist, but that's the problem.
He's the ex-Marilyn Manson guitarist.
Because he is phenomenal, and one of his fun games is to see how few mistakes he can make. He's like the antithesis of Jay Younger,
who's just punk rock and...
Yeah, he's just like, I've got these fucking riffs, and then I'm going to play some horrible bent notes, and they will just create this amazing dissonance.
So he's too precise for the music.
Yeah, like, basically. You know the slide part on More Human Than Human?
Yeah.
When he plays it, it sounds pristine.
Right.
And that is wrong.
Yeah.
That's the fucking wrong way to play that.
That Cosmic Monsters.
Yeah.
I thought there was a bit too much guitar wigging on that, to be honest.
No, you're wrong.
I thought it was a bit Yngwie or something.
Honestly.
You're wingy.
Yeah, you're wingy.
There's no fucking fury.
I mean, it was otherwise solid, but I just thought the guitar wigged a bit.
Yeah. I think what you're saying about John Five being a bit too precise, I think that's what I think that might be why I don't like Rob Zombie's solo stuff as much. It's a lot cleaner. I do like Hellbilly Deluxe's first solo album.
Yeah, that's great,
but it's, even then, it's still a lot more electronic and a lot more clinical than Astro Creep. It sounds thinner as a result, whereas Astro Creep is this absolutely massive sounding album.
Yeah, like they lost, but by losing his band, he lost a large amount of his sound. Like, he could replicate it.
Well, they wrote all the music previously. Yeah. It was always he did the lyrics, the band did the music.
Yeah, so, like, if he's recruiting guitarists who can play a bit like Jay Younger, then he's basically just recruiting a cover band.
Yeah.
What was all that Eastern-style wailing about in Blood, Milk and Sky Heaven?
Heaven? No, it's just called Blood, Milk and Sky.
Yeah.
Oh, I've written it down wrong.
Blood, Milk and Sky is my favourite White Zombie song. It's absolutely amazing.
It's one of my least favourite.
Really?
Yeah, I just didn't know at the time. Like, I'd probably listen to it now and quite like it, but at the time I was like,
it is really melodic and it's slower than the rest of the album.
It's got a really,
it's still heavy,
dark bass riff.
Yeah. And it's also got a there's a bit of backward speech at the start.
Yeah.
Which back when I was probably about 14 or 15, I went round my mate James Buckingham's house, and he got fairly religious parents.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, you know what we should do? Because he'd got a new computer. It's like, oh, we can record music into the computer and then play it backwards and find out what the back messages are and stuff like that. And found out that that guy in the background is saying unholy.
Oh, really? Well, you know, James is playing at the end of this month in Tamworth.
We can't really plug it for him because this will go out after the gig.
Oh, it will.
So.
Well, you should go.
Yes. Get a time machine and go back in time to see our mate James playing in Slacklaring.
As much as I like James, if you've got a time machine, go see White Zombie instead.
Fair point. If you've got a time machine, you can see all sorts of people, to be fair.
It's true.
I've got a list.
But if you've got limited time machine resources, like, yeah, if you can just borrow one.
If it's like a pay-as-you-go card, yeah, then, where you've got a certain number of...
Yeah, I'd probably go with White Zombie.
Yeah, same here.
I think I would too, you know.
Yeah, sorry, James.
Jeez, this is...
Well, I've seen Slacklyrics. Yeah.
Some weird levels of progress we've achieved in this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, because White Zombie are a band that can play their instruments, and yet Tracy likes them.
No, because they've got just a lot of wailing guitar feedback in places.
Yeah.
They're very noisy. And they actually does like some weird, like, dissonant
just
noise.
Overdriven guitar noise.
Fair.
They're great. I love White Zombie.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. You all should listen to them.
Yeah, also he directs films as well.
This is the thing, he's probably more well known for that these days.
Yeah.
He did a remake, didn't he, of Halloween?
Halloween, yeah.
I've not seen that.
It's not very good, but I liked it because I like shit films.
Yeah. Well, he likes shit films as well, so that's probably what he's going for.
My favourite film is Troll 2, which is well known as being one of the worst films ever made. He's not quite at that level.
He definitely isn't.
I really enjoyed House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, House of a Thousand Corpses made me feel genuinely uncomfortable.
And The Devil's Rejects, which is the sequel to that. And he's just started making the third one in that series.
Yes, he has.
Which I can't remember the name of.
And he does the music for them as well, yeah?
Well, he does some of the music. He compiles other tracks for the music as well. Devil's Rejects has got loads of old, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd and stuff like that in there.
Right.
But he also puts a lot of funk in there and stuff. There's like Brick House by the Commodores. Which he then covered.
Yeah. He's done I'm Your Boogeyman as well.
Yes, which is great.
It is.
But they've got a real funky sound to their music. Yeah. I mean, Thundercus 65 has got a real groove to it.
Yeah. Well, Le Sexorcist, though, the correct sort of classification is it's groove metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar to the kind of groove stuff that Pantera was doing.
Just a lot less serious. A
lot less serious and better. I like Pantera, but White Zombie are better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pantera's an awful name.
Yeah, but when they originally got that name, they were a hair metal band with, like, spandex and stuff like that.
So I think they were from somewhere called Pantago or something like that.
Ah.
So that might be it. I don't know. Not saying that's the definite truth.
I thought they just really liked Panthers.
Maybe. I feel like we've reached an end.
I think we should probably wrap this.
We'll herd the cats towards the end of the episode.
Well, no, because it's not the end of the episode.
The end of this part of the episode.
This section, yes. So I think, Tracy, are you going to tell us about the White Stripes?
I will. Stripes were a rock duo from Detroit consisting of Jack White on vocals and guitar and Meg White on drums and sometime vocals. Depending on which version of their backstory you believe, they're either brother and sister or ex-husband and wife.
That's the proven one.
It is. They formed in 1997 and released 6 studio albums over the next 10 years, but it wasn't until 2002 when there was a resurgence of garage rock that they gained much critical acclaim. Their 2003 album, Elephant, has got the most widely recognised singles, The Hardest Button to Button and Seven Nation Army, which has totally become their signature song.
Absolutely. It's... Yeah.
It's the song where they totally went against everything that they stood for, though, wasn't
yes.
it?
Really? Yes.
Do you think? In what way?
Well, absolutely. The whole, we're not going to ever have a bass on the album.
Yeah.
Technically, they don't have a bass on it.
No, but having a bass sound is basically having a bass, right?
It's a pitch-shifted down guitar, but I absolutely agree.
Was yeah.
Where is that where you picked up on them? Around that sort of time, or?
No, much earlier.
I was well aware of it before that. Yeah. Whatever Hotel Yorba was the first one of theirs I heard.
White Blood Cells, yes.
I fucking hated that at the time.
I don't really know the first album, actually, I've got to say, but the second album from 2000 is still... I absolutely love it, and it is still my favourite album of theirs.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's just...
I would agree with that. You're Pretty Good Looking for a Girl, Hello Operator. I think they were both on the playlist that we did.
I've heard You're Pretty Good Looking for a Girl. That was on the playlist, yeah.
That's... Isn't that on... Was that on the Juno? No, it was We're Gonna Be Friends that was on the Juno soundtrack.
Yeah.
And that was...
I mean, Distill, it's an immaculate album. It's got everything. It's got blues, it's got riffs, it's got slide guitar. It's got some melodic and some screamed vocals. It's got brilliant piano, just stomping piano riffs. And Meg's drumming comes in for a lot of piss taking.
It's because she's shit at drumming.
I like her drumming.
But I love her drumming.
You know what?
I love that naive style. It's Mo Tucker.
No, see, that's the thing, right? This is the thing that I realised when I was listening to the playlist, is you can hear his guitar playing develop and his sound gets stronger and stronger, but she is still shit. Which means that she is doing it on purpose.
That's...
Because you can't play for 10 years in a band, gigging constantly, and not get good.
Do you reckon she was secretly like Bill Bruford?
I don't know, but, honestly, you can't play every fucking day for 10 years, which is what you basically are going to do if you're in a professional band, improving. You just can't.
If you don't practice in between, you could potentially do that.
No, there's no way you could stay at that level of bullshit, fucking shitty drumming.
She's generally in time. She's not out of time.
No, it's just really basic.
It's simplistic.
It's a naive style, her naive drumming style.
It's not naive. You can't naively play an instrument. You can play it well or you can play it badly. It's not like, oh, I don't know what this is. Yes, you do. It's fucking drums. Have you had spoons and fucking saucepans? You've had drums, right?
She's a demon on the triangle, though.
If we could... Honestly, we could have a positive episode if we stayed the fuck away from everything that she does in the band.
Well, to be fair, I believe that's why they split up.
Because he jammed with a good drummer and was like, whoa!
No, he basically felt that the music was too limited by what... He was limited by what Meg could play.
Yeah.
So he couldn't write more complicated songs because she wasn't able to keep up with it.
I'm surprised it took him 10 years to get to that.
But the thing is,
assertion. I think I could write complicated songs out of her ability now.
The only thing that I find interesting about the White Stripes was the self-imposed limitations that they put on themselves. And as they got later through the career, they threw those away and they got less interesting for me.
Well, that's the thing about them. All right, so I think it was absolutely deliberate. Jack White liked a pared back sound. He actually said in that documentary that he did with The Edge and Jimmy Page,
it
might get loud. He actually says technology is a destroyer. It's a destroyer for truth and emotion, and it doesn't make you a more creative person.
Yeah, but the thing is, in that documentary, he's the most contrived character.
I mean, this is like Joe Bonamassa saying that people who are soundscapists playing guitars through loads of pedals
aren't musicians.
Yeah. It's just someone who has gone, this is all I can do, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to impose my shit on everyone else.
But
digital recording is good.
Yeah. I mean, he absolutely hated digital.
He wants to do that for himself, that's fine and that's great. Yeah. Limitations are a massively, massively important thing in music.
Yeah.
I've done it myself. Driven Like the Snow, my band, it's acoustic. We're a noisy band, but we don't have electric guitars. We have an electric bass. That's the only thing. Because the concept of the band that I had in my head was that after some kind of catastrophic post-apocalyptic event, when there is no electricity, apart from the bass, the whole idea is that you could find these instruments and you could carry on making music.
And an omnicord.
Yeah, you join later. Shh. Like Jack White, I changed some of the limitations later on.
Because omnicords are cool.
Became less interesting.
And became less... No.
But the became less is, fucking productive, definitely.
That's a fair point. Yes, nearly three years
since I
last
I am the Meg White
propaganda.
Of that band.
No, you're not. Actually, I don't know who is. Yeah, fair point. But I really like the first album, which Tracy, you don't know very well.
No, not at all.
Listen to it, it's pretty good. But yeah, Distill, I think, is great. But then they start adding more and more instruments on the next album. And then for Elephant, which is the album with Seven Nation Army on it,
yeah,
Jack White bought a whammy pedal and didn't fucking switch it off again.
No. Yeah, he does use that a lot.
Overuses his Digitech whammy pedal all the time, and it's just like the thing is, he's got this whole persona where he's like this southern gentleman, fucking blues, authentic blues musician.
But he's not.
He's not. I believe more that Rob Zombie is an actual zombie than I believe Jack White.
Yeah, like I've seen his pedal board. I've seen the fact that he's had someone take them apart and bronze all of his pedals.
That was for a later band, because initially they were all painted red.
Yeah, obviously.
For the white stripes.
Thematic.
Yes.
But like he's...
Which I like that.
He's a righteous guitarist. Like he is, he's a good guitarist. He always has a fucking great guitar sound. Later stuff. Like,
it's all right.
There's some big fucking chords on there. There's valve amps being properly abused.
Yeah.
That was... Yeah, like, I'm glad that you told me that he'd jacked the White Stripes in because...
Because of being limited by Meg, yeah. And she's not played anything since, as far as I'm aware.
Well, she didn't really play much at the time, did she?
But it was absolutely deliberate, though, at the time. From the liner notes of Distill, he actually said, when ideas become too complicated and the pursuit of perfection is misconstrued as a need for excess... When there's so much involved that individual components cannot be discerned, when it's hard to break the rules of excess, then new rules need to be established. It descends back to the beginning, where the construction of things, visual or oral, is too uncomplicated to not be beautiful.
He's such a pretentious cunt.
Yeah, like he's...
It's...
And that's pretentious in the term that everything he does is under a fucking pretense.
Yeah, like...
There's nothing authentic about him at all.
No, there's bands that have done this two-person thing. He was not the first. No. He's not the progenitor of that shit. Lightning Bolt have been doing it for years.
Well, he was actually massively influenced by a two-piece psychobilly band called the Flat Duo Jets. There's just vocal and drums from a... Guitar, vocal and drums from North Carolina.
Just vocal and drums.
Yeah.
It could have been a one piece.
Yeah. But he was also... full disclosure, I've actually met him and he was a complete fucking cunt to me in person.
Really?
Really?
Yes. I used to think they were all right, but I was really put off by the way he treats his fans.
See, that's one of those things, isn't it? Like, you meet someone and they're a dick, and you're like,
yeah,
this has ruined your music for me. Now.
Yeah, it was Nottingham Ice Arena. We went to see them.
Oh, you there. Keep going to that
it's,
place.
I never will again. I've been three times and.
See, I learned after the first
Radiohead
one.
Radiohead were good there.
Okay, but that's because you're a massive Radiohead fanboy.
I'm a massive Smashing Pumpkins fanboy, and they weren't that good.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, I went to see White Stripes. Now, to be fair, they weren't my favourite band at the time. I quite liked some of their music. It was the second time I'd seen them, because I saw them at Leeds Festival, which was before Elephant. I think that was White Blood Cell sort of era.
Uh-huh.
And so we went round to try and get like some CDs signed and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had told the security to make sure people stayed up the other end of the road in a, we don't want to be seen by these people. So we were sort of waiting up there anyway, because a few people that I was with really wanted to get some stuff signed. I wasn't that bothered, but I was driving them home, so I thought, I'll hang around. And then one of the security guys came up to
us. Were you with Mal by any chance?
No, I didn't. Don't think it was before I knew Mal.
Okay.
One of the security guys came up to us and went, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but he's been fucking horrible to everyone backstage. He's in that bowling alley next door. So we went into the bowling place. And he was there bowling with the support band. The support band were a band called Blanche. And they were sort of alt country kind of stuff. You'd probably have quite
liked
them.
Probably would.
And they were really good, and I was really impressed. And I'd bought their CD, so I went over and talked to them rather than bothering talking to him. But he was trying to ignore everybody for a bit, carrying on bowling, and then he just picked up a like trestle table, slammed it down on the floor, and went, "We might as well just set up a fucking table then." And then started really angrily, grumpily signing things. So Andy, one of the guys with us, went over and got him to sign a bootleg poster that he'd bought outside, just out of spite.
Awesome.
Fuck you.
And I didn't bother getting anything signed because he was being a complete fucking wanker about it. And he wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for the people that had bought the gig tickets and bought the records. If you're going to be, you know, if you've got to at least be fucking polite to people. If he'd have said, look, I'm trying to be bowling with my friends, I could understand that. But don't be a fucking wanker about it.
No. There's a lot of things about the White Stripes that annoyed me, and that I didn't know that, and that annoys me even more. Yeah. Like the deliberate lo-fi balls.
You know, I can dig some of that.
But I mean, it's a gimmick, right?
Absolutely.
That's all it is. It's a fucking gimmick. You can be as pretentious as you want about it, justifying it. It's a gimmick.
But it's the whole
thing. There's nothing wrong with gimmicks.
No, there isn't. But trying to make it more fucking arty.
The issue that I have, he tries to portray himself as fucking Sunhouse.
Like, if Rob Zombie was
He does. That is true.
If Rob Zombie came out with, well, you know, the truth of art is horror and this imagery and blah, blah, and tried to tell this big fucking convoluted justification, you'd be like,
no, it's fun.
You're a tit. But he's like, yeah, man, I dress like this. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you've got a gimmick. Like fucking Ghost. They have a massive gimmick.
Also,
every time they release an album, the previous singer dies and then a new singer comes on stage. He's the same guy. But it's ridiculous. And they...
And the rest of the band are nameless ghouls with masks on and you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Although there were a lot of rumours recently that their female bass player was Sean Yuzult.
Oh, really?
It wasn't, but there were a lot of rumours about it.
But, like, there's all kind... You know, they've got a gimmick, but they're not trying to justify it as art. It's just, like, it's just a gimmick. And that... It stuck in my craw, as you may have noticed.
Yeah. It wouldn't bother me so much if he wasn't claiming to be so authentic and putting above all things the fact that you've got to be this authentic fucking blues man.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're not. You used to be.
Yeah, because the Black Keys are way more bluesy.
He'll hate that.
He'll fucking hate that.
I know. I heard about that the other day.
Yes. Like, the main guy from the Black Keys,
Dan Auerbach,
their kids go to the same school.
Yep.
And Jack White was angry about this because he thought that he was copying him even at that level.
But the thing is, right, the Black Keys, like, his vocal style sound nothing like someone has stamped on his foot.
Whereas sound, in the early days, like an authentic blues band.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jack White.
Whereas, like, Jack White's vocal stylings are very much like you've just stamped on my foot. He's a bit of a yowly cat kind
of
guy.
He's got some really tender vocals sometimes.
But the famous stuff.
He's got a great voice.
He's got a decent voice and he's a great guitar player. I'm not taking anything away from his musical ability.
And he doesn't just do blues either. I mean, I think after After Elephant, when it went a lot rockier, when they did the next album, Get Behind Me, Satan, I think it was less bluesy, and there's tinges, I think, of gospel and old style country on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he produced that Lucinda Williams album around about that. It was a bit earlier than that, I think. But so that's where he's got the old stool.
I mean, they've got a lot of huge amount of Led Zeppelin.
Say Led Zeppelin's the biggest influence, definitely, on the sound. Because he's vocals are a less controlled version of Robert Plant.
Yeah.
He's trying to hit the same sort of register.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's fair.
Just without being as good. He may be technically as good as that, and he may be deliberately sounding shit. I don't know.
Could be all part of the fake.
Yep.
So, I'm presuming then, if you don't like Jack White's vocals, you like Meg's even less.
Jesus Christ. The only song I heard that had got her vocals is that...
The one with Holly Golightly.
Yeah, the I Really Do Love You thing.
It's true that we love one another. That's not Meg White.
Is it not?
She's singing harmony vocals.
She does sing as well.
Yeah, there's a bit of dialogue, a couple
of lines, but that's Holly Golightly.
Who's
an English singer.
I didn't like any of that song.
See, I adore Meg's vocals. I love the way she's slightly off-key, slightly flat. I think she's brilliant.
I honestly don't like people who are being shit on purpose. It's not a thing. I don't think it should be a thing.
I'm trying to think of another example.
Of what, being shit on purpose?
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are shit and can't help it.
I think there's a band we've got coming up in series two. You're going to hate his voice.
Who? Who is it now? Who am I going to hate?
There's a Scottish band called The Pastels.
Of course there's a fucking Scottish
band. It's a Scottish band called The Pastels.
I'm going to look and find loads of really good Scottish bands and then sub out so many of
Mogwai.
Mogwai, exactly.
Anyway,
is that fucking Aerogram? Aerogram are great.
Oh, one of their albums was terrible. The last album was terrible.
But they're good at doing what they do, though. Yeah. That's the thing.
It's Chemical Underground Records.
Because something that people throw at... So the band's called The Pastels. You probably hate them already.
Colin does.
No, I don't mind them.
And
a lot of people say
that he can't sing.
Right. And
I think this is totally untrue. I utterly adore his singing style.
But you are renowned for just liking people who are shit at things.
Like who?
King Creosote.
He's not shit at anything.
at music.
He's a really accomplished folk guitar player.
Technically, no, Tracy's right on that. He is good at...
He's an amazing accordion player. It's vanished from my head. So I just picked the first thing that we talked about recently that Tracy liked.
You weren't much of a fan of Aidan Moffat's vocals.
Was not. Fucking was not.
Oh, wait, and you think that? Do you think he's been shit on purpose?
No, he's not.
He's just shit.
I love Aidan Moffat.
I love Aidan Moffat.
I'm not saying everyone should be like fucking playing out their asses and like dropping some Steve Vai shit or whatever. Not at all. Because you know I love Therapy and Andy Cairns. Andy Cairns is playing to his ability and he's not doing deliberately.
I'm still not sure that Meg White is putting it on. I just think that she's a...
I think to start off with, she wasn't. But I still maintain that there's no way you could play that often...
For 10 years and not improve.
For that period of time and not improve. You'd have to willfully...
I've definitely known singers that have carried on that long and still been shit.
But that's singing.
I don't really
want
to name them.
Like drumming, you're just learning. You don't even do it consciously. It's muscle memory. You build up this thing, and I think you'd have to deliberately downplay, deliberately, like Les Dawson, right?
Well, yeah, because he obviously was a technically amazing piano player to be able to have just get the right wrong notes.
Exactly.
I don't know if she was.
And he did that because it was comedy.
Yeah.
don't know. It's contentious, and I've ruined the flow of the podcast. But
well, I'll tell you what. Shall we talk instead about his later band, the Raconteurs? Did you like them at all?
Yeah, you know.
I only know Steady As She Goes by the Raconteurs.
See, I really like Steady As She Goes. Yeah. I didn't know it was him.
I've got both of their albums, and see, I was a big fan of Brendan Benson, who is in the Raconteurs. I was a big fan of his solo stuff, and I think that band merges the very, very best of Jack White's and Brendan Benson's styles and brings them together into just a
Do
really...
they share the songwriting between them? I mean, do they write together, or do they do it like Teenage Fan Club, where half the album's done by one and the
I've got a feeling they don't write together.
Yeah.
Because when you hear a Jack White one, it sounds very much like the White Stripes, and when you hear a Brendan Benson song one, it sounds more like a Brendan Benson song.
That makes more sense.
I don't know for sure, but...
I had a Brendan Benson album. It was quite good.
La Parka?
Got, I think so.
Got One Mississippi?
You're Quiet on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is brilliant.
And
I thought that was a really nice blend of two styles that you wouldn't have thought would work well together, necessarily.
Okay. I quite like some of Jack White's solo stuff.
Now, that's washed over me. I did buy Blunderbuss when it first came out and barely listened to it. I listened to it again last night and it's still really dull.
It's got some good songs on it, but I can't remember the names of them.
Well, exactly.
Did you put any of those on the playlist?
No, we didn't.
There was definitely some Jack White solo stuff. There was 16 Saltines.
Oh, there was. Wasn't that from the Dead
She's
Weather?
She's got stickers on in the box.
See, I like the Dead Weather. Really like that.
Do you?
I'm sure that's a solo one. There's definitely at least one solo track on there.
Well, I don't think I got to it.
Yes, you're right. It's from Blunderbuss, 16 Saltines, yeah. I didn't like that Dead Weather track that was on the playlist. Cut Like a Buffalo.
Oh, Cut Like a Buffalo. That's ace.
There's some really weird dub reggae thing going on.
In fact,
there's a little bit where the chord progression sounded like it was going to go into Madness's Baggy Trousers.
You shouldn't be going into Magnus's baggy trousers.
Not.
But it's just really jarring. No, I didn't like the Dead Weather. I don't really know anything about them, though, I've got to say.
They've got the woman from The Kills, Alison Mosshart, is in the band as well. I think. Could be wrong. I, as you can probably tell, I'm not the biggest fan of Jack White stuff. I have seen him live twice with the White Stripes and once solo.
I've never seen them live, actually. I wished I had.
Definitely not among any of the best gigs I've seen.
I mean, John Peel was a big White Stripes fan.
He was, but he was a big fan of the early stuff.
Yeah, that's true to say.
He was, you know, he once promoted a gig that they were playing at Boston Music Rooms in Tufnell Park in London, the Dome, Tufnell Park, that is. Which is like literally around the corner from where our friend Liz used to live, which is where we always park when we go down to London.
Yeah.
Which is a fairly small pub. And the White Stripes played a gig there that John Peel had organised. And that was, I think that was just before White Blood Cells came out.
Right.
And I'd heard of them by that point. But one thing that I do like... obviously, I like the limitations, particularly on the first few albums, but I really like the way that that he's colour-coded everything. So the White Stripes is all red, white and black.
Yeah.
Mm.
His solo stuff is all blue. It's blue, black and white, I think. I think, was it the Dead Weather that was sort of gold and yellow? Is that the one where he made his pedal board all gold?
Yeah, I think it was. Well, it's bronze, but...
Bronze, yeah. And I think... Dead Weather was just black, but I think that's a pretty cool idea to you could, from the other side of the room, look at your CD collection if you're a big Jack White fan and know immediately which one was which.
Yeah, no, it's good to have like a visual aesthetic going on. Yeah.
White Zombies is better though.
Yeah.
I mean they called their publishing company Peppermint Stripe Music.
Yeah, well, that's why they called themselves the White Stripes, because Meg White was always eating these peppermint sweets that were...
And they painted it on her bass drum.
Her bass drum design, yeah.
Did you see in the artwork of Distill, there's a picture of something they call the Peppermint Triple Tremolo, which is an amp, beautiful cabinet and revolving speakers inside it,
with
the peppermint design on.
So it's like a Leslie speaker.
Yeah.
Leslie speaker is, they're originally used for Hammond organs, and the speaker rotates.
Yeah.
And it gives you like a modulated,
it's like an underwater kind of sound.
Yeah. And then guitarists like Hendrix and Robin Trower used to. They actually used a pedal that emulated it. They got Roger Mayer to build a Univibe pedal for them.
I think the other thing about their image as well, not just the colour coding, they had some amazing videos done.
Oh, yes.
The guy, Michael Gondry.
Michel Gondry.
Oh,
French.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
I've got a DVD of a compilation of Michel Gondry's videos.
Yeah.
And it's really
just White Stripes, or did he?
No,
a lot of others.
No, he did. Who else did he do? He did videos for Beck.
All right.
He did completely black. He did loads for the White Stripes, so they're the majority of them on there.
Yeah.
He did one for Kylie Minogue that was similar in like effect style to Hardest Button to Button, where each drum hit, there's another version of them appears.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's like a row of them eventually.
You see it?
And it's almost like visualising a delay trail.
Mm.
Yeah.
He did a Kylie Minogue one where she's walking round like a street in a circle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then she walks past herself and there's another one of her. And
just looped, exactly. Endless loops. It's beautifully done, actually. I really, really liked that video. I love the one for Fell in Love with a Girl, actually.
Is that the Lego one?
Yeah, stop motion animation Lego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good.
And I think he did Seven Nation Army as well.
Yeah, I think he must have.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did the Blue Orchid one, because that was a very arresting.
I don't know, that was years after I had the DVD, so I don't know. The DVD came out in about 2002, 2003.
Got you.
So it was really early.
Do you like their cover of I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself?
Yeah.
It was never my... Even when I really, really liked Elephant and played it loads, it was never my favourite on there. I really like Black Math. That's a good track.
Yeah.
But
it's an interesting version of, you know, what would have been a very beautiful orchestrated, you know, big lush Burt Bacharach number.
Yeah.
Honestly, if it had got an actual drummer on it, it would sound great.
That's all she needs to do.
Yeah. You just played it tighter than she did.
Fair point. Fair point. To be fair, when I play drums, it does sound like Meg White, although I'm quite often playing Nine Inch Nails drum beats in the style of Meg White.
Yeah, like I sound like Meg White when I drum.
But you haven't been doing it constantly for 10 years.
No, and I think if I had, I probably wouldn't. I think I'd sound at least like Lars by now.
Poor Lars. I mean, do you not think even by the time they've got to the last album, Icky Thump, that the drumming...
No, I think it just sounded equally as all of the stuff on that playlist, the drumming sounded equally lacklustre.
Maybe she's consistent.
It's how I knew that the band had changed. Because I was like, fuck the drums. Oh, we're on Dead Weather. Okay.
I was going to say, I didn't think we had anything from Icky Thump on that playlist, but we did. We had the Little Cream Soda.
Yeah.
The one where he sounds vocally like that weirdest guy YouTube video.
Yes.
About the Arby's crash thing.
It was uncanny.
Yep. You should all check that out.
If you search Arby's crash.
The weirdest guy ever, I believe.
Right.
And then it's a news report from Arby's, but he's done multiple ones.
He's done one at Comic-Con or something.
Yeah, like he's definitely a comedian or a personality, but his delivery in speech is very similar to that particular song.
Right, I think we're pretty much done there.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
That seems like got something else, you just didn't want to say it.
Yeah, say it if you've got something else. Come on, bring it on.
I'll try and hold back if it's a...
Was it that you really like Meg White's drumming?
I was only going to mention actually the garage bagpipes.
What?
That they have on one of the tracks on Icky Thump.
Right, okay.
St Andrew, this battle in the air has got bagpipes.
Oh, yes.
Garage bagpipes.
Right, I've seen a live thing where they were playing in an old people's home or something, and they had all the bagpipers come on at the start.
It just sounded awesome.
Bagpipes very rarely sound awesome. I don't think that's the right adjective to use there.
Don't forget that Tracy is a Scottophile.
This is true.
Indeed.
Jockophile?
This could be either. I think we'll probably stop about there then.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
So, next episode...
We're cheating a little.
No, we're not. It's as always was planned. It's the final proper episode of the series.
X, Y, and Z.
X, Y, and Z. So, we're going to be discussing...
X-ray specs.
You'd love that, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know why I didn't pick them, actually.
Yeah. Well, perhaps we can do them for a later series.
We should. I love
it. Oh, wait, is it actually exhibit?
No, we're not actually doing an X at all.
No.
We're doing a Y and a Z.
There's no X band this time, but there will be in future.
So we are doing Neil Young.
Yes, and Warren Zevon.
We've only got one Y and one Z.
This is true.
And no X.
Because it's a normal length episode. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.